it is, Brad Lee back again with another episode of Dropping Bombs today in the studio. Folks, I got a real treat for you. Patrick Carroll in the house. What's up, Pat?
How's it going, Brad?
Man, it's going good. How you liking Vegas?
I love Vegas. I mean, I was just, as we were walking here.
Oh, do me a favor. Pull that close.
Okay.
There we go.
Is this better?
Way better.
We went to dinner last night, and walking out of dinner, I mean, you're just walking on the strip and it feels like America. I mean, you got with the UFC, and I love what Dana White's done. Just if the anti-woke vibe out here is my kind of vibe. And I was literally saying, you know, they don't care who you are, right? This town was built on gangsters. And so I didn't go to college. So I always kind of, you know, I think was a little self-conscious about it, you know, over the years. Here, they don't give a fuck. If you can make money, you know, it's the wild, wild west out here. And they want you. And I went to Dubai a couple of years, and it felt like a similar vibe. Like, you know, I built my business on...
A little cleaner out there, though.
Yeah. Well, except they'll shoot you if you do the wrong thing, or kill you, or hang you, or something. I built my apartment business on a strategy of the red states. Business-friendly states. Really, it was because initially I couldn't buy in New York and L.A. and San Francisco because I was young, and they were like, get the fuck out of here. So I got pushed to Georgia, Texas, North Carolina, South Carolina, Vegas, Colorado. And so I had to figure out why I should get these guys to invest with me. So I started studying it. Well, every corporation was relocating to Dallas, Texas, or Houston, or Atlanta, because instead of living in New York City and paying $100 a square foot office rent, you can pay 30. Your employees live like kings. They can buy, you know, back in the day, it was $150,000, $200,000 house in Carrollton, Texas. You could fucking, you know, have a nice house. So you started to see this migration, and New York would overtax, overcomplicate. It would take developers forever to build. It would take companies forever. And they said, fuck it. And, you know, guys like me were, I was based in Atlanta and building in Texas and Florida. I was doing 10x I don't even want to use that word 10x. I was doing many, many times the amount my competitors were doing because I didn't have to fuck around with regulation as much as them and all that stuff.
Well, let's go back. I want to go back to the beginning because a lot of my viewers may not even know who you are. Folks, if you guys don't know who he is already, Patrick Carroll, CEO of Lorac Holdings, which I imagine is Carroll backwards.
Yes, sir.
Mega, I would say, real estate mogul. No, you had 100,000 doors.
Yes, sir. I've done over 20,000 or 20 billion in transactions. So I bought over 100,000 units since 2010, backed by all institutional equity. And
you didn't crowdfund any of it.
It's all institutional. And that's why you asked me what I'm motivated by. I see guys like Grant Cardone raising tons of money, and I know I'm better than him. Like, it's not like, hey, is this blue? Well, it's kind of navy blue, but no, I know this, right? So I know I'm going to be able to raise retail money. I just never have. So all mine was institutional. So imagine every time. So I did Goldman Sachs, Carlyle, all these guys. I'm from Tampa, Florida. I didn't go to college. I had an arrest record. I had to convince these guys from, you know, Harvard and everything like that to partner with me. So it was already like I went in there with two strikes against me. So really what I had to do is find these deals that were so fucking good, they had to say yes. And when I first started my business, you know, nobody knew who Carroll was. And so they would go with CBRE or one of these, you know, Trammell Crowe related, one of these groups that had been around 30 years. So I couldn't really go through the broker network. So I bought a deal outside of Atlanta from a developer named Mike Davis in 2010. 2 weeks later, I get a call. Is this Pat Carroll? I said, yes, sir. He said, the Pat Carroll that bought my deal in Bethesda? I said, yes, sir. He goes, you want to go to Houston? I said, yes, sir. So I show up at PDK in a suit and tie. I was probably like 28 years old. And he is self-driving his own helicopter. And I hop in this fucker. I've never been in a helicopter. Takes me down to Stockbridge, Georgia. We get on a Citation 10, first private jet I've ever been on. The motherfucker owned me. The second I'm on that private jet, he owned me, right? And I knew it. In my mind, I was like, as soon as I can afford one, I'm getting one. We fly to Houston. His guys meet me, drive me around, show me eight, nothing special, just garden style 300 unit complexes. So 2,400 units, right? So then I reconvene with him at like 5 o'clock. We get on the plane. We're flying back to Atlanta. He said, well, see anything you like? I said, yes, sir. I mean, I like them all. They all look pretty good depending on the price. And he says, what do you think about 100 a unit? And at the time, I knew I couldn't even build it for that. And shit was probably going to sell for 120 a unit. I said, sir, I'll take it. He said, well, which one? I said, well, all of them. And he said, you can get that done? I said, yes, sir. Man, I was broke as a joke, literally. And so then we said, okay. He goes, he was asking me what I was doing that weekend. I said, me and my fiance are going down to the beach, Destin. So from Atlanta, everybody used to drive to Destin. It was a bitch of a drive, 7 hours. He's like, you're not driving. I'll fly you down there. Picks us up, flies us down there. It was a fucking very classic move. I ended up buying those deals. Barry Sternlicht from Starwood put up the equity. So that was like my first big, you know, transaction that got everybody's attention. And then I did, you know, several other large portfolios and got the Wall Street Journal a few times. And then it was just like, it was like liftoff.
So you said you were broke though.
Hell yeah.
So number one, how'd you buy the one building from him in the first place with no money?
I left Tampa, Florida. I was an athlete in high school. I thought I was going to play college, but basketball, I didn't. Fucked off for like 6 months and ended up going, okay, I got to figure something out. My dad was a clothing rep that covered the state of Florida. He got me a job to be a clothing rep in Atlanta, covering like Carolinas and Georgia and all that. And so I was Googling around. This was like 01, 02. I ended up finding a mortgage broker named Lisa Penson. She was like an attractive lady back in the day. She got me 100% like stated income. I didn't even have a job, Brad, ever. She got me 100% mortgage to buy a condo in Midtown Atlanta. I bought it. I walked in and told my parents I was moving to Atlanta. They said, what? I didn't have furniture for 3 months. So when I figured out I could do that, like 2 months later, I fucking went online, citibank.com, applied for a first-time mortgage, and bought another one, 2161 in Glenwood Drive in Atlanta.
So these are just condos?
No, this the first one was a condo. This second house I bought was 2161. It was a two-bedroom, one-bath, single-family home in like the projects in Atlanta. And I bought it for like 120 grand. Hired a crew from Home Depot, probably paid them $1,000 of cash, and then I sold it for like 150. And then I started doing these things. So all never.
That's like any, flipping though.
Flipping, yeah. Never any of my money. And then I started, somebody came to me and said, hey, would you put up a little bit of money for this builder to build 6 spec homes? And I was like, so I met with the guy. The guy was unimpressive, fucking had like beer on his breath, no bullshit. And I'm like, if this fucker can do this, like, you know, because all development and construction is you're quarterbacking everybody.
It's knowing the workers.
Yeah. And me, everybody thinks I'm stupid because I ask a lot of questions. But that day, I asked everything. Okay, well, who's this guy? Drywall. Oh, yeah, what's your name? Let me get your name just in case. Boom, boom, boom. So he fucking taught me how to build a house, basically. And so I ended up doing spec homes. And then I did townhomes.
But I'm trying to figure out, where's the money? I'm picturing you, yeah, back in the day, just a wise ass, I would imagine.
Yeah, hell yeah.
No money.
Buddies from high school. Tell you, the money came from
But you had good credit, no?
I had good credit because I didn't really have any, but I got 100% mortgages to flip the first 2 or 3 houses.
Can someone do that in this day?
No, unfortunately, because I could get 100% mortgages, right? And it's funny, like a guy named Bob Face, who's one of the biggest, he's one of my mentors, one of the biggest guys in my, you know, in the multifamily business. He said before 2008, there was not this thing called equity. Equity is the difference between the debt and the purchase price, right? What you can borrow and how much cash you have to put up on top of the debt. So if you buy a property for $100, they give you a $70 loan. The $30 is equity, right? Before the Wall Street fucked us all, guys like me could go borrow 100% of the building. So you ask, how do you do it? Well, I say, Mr. Banker, it's going to cost me $100 to build this building, even though it's going to cost me $80. I know that. So I'm keeping a little money along the side. So I'm feeding it, things like that. And then you sell a few deals and
now you got some coin.
And so what I did, so I sold a big student housing development in March of 2008, made me $9 million. All right. I was like 27.
Dang. How'd you feel with that?
When that fucking hit the awesome. Bank? I mean, I was telling my buddies that I don't mind. You said I can say anything. I was in Tampa where I grew up. My buddies were, some of them were still fucking around in college. We went to a strip club and I pulled money out of the ATM and I guess I left my receipt. And my friend pulled it, was behind me, and he saw the receipt and he said, "What in the fuck?" It was like $9 million in my fucking ATM. And well, so
I used to pull that move a little bit just in hopes that whoever I was with that night, ladies, I'd say, oh, grab the receipt.
That's awesome. No, but it's true. So, I mean, it's the craziest story in the world, and I tell it every single day. And I used to go, so I sold that apartment deal. Like 7 months later, Lehman Brothers crashed, the world fucking fell apart. So I'm like 27, 28. I've got a little bit of equity. I'm like, and I didn't come from money. So I'm like, I can't fucking lose this. So I'm studying office. I'm studying hotel. I'm studying retail. All these different sectors, how these old guys make their money, who left, who lost it, who, you know, who Trump went up and went down, up and down. I didn't want that. I wanted fucking consistency. And so I started reading about the apartment business and all these wealthy families, these second and third generation families in New York City really made their money in the apartments. I mean, the LaFracs, all these people, right? And then I started looking at public companies. Post Properties was a publicly traded REIT based in Atlanta. They owned 20,000 units, very similar to what my company looked like. My company ended up bigger, but I read back 30 years of 10-Ks of their earnings. And the average occupancy over like 20, 30 years was fucking 93%. I'm going, that's it. And then I started seeing people getting foreclosed on like crazy. And then I'm like, well, shit. People are going to have to move out of houses. They're going to go to apartments. I like the fact that it's always been quasi-safe. And so I started doing it. As soon as one institutional group backed me, the first one was Lubert Adler out of Philadelphia. Everyone, because I used to say, I used to call it waving my ass around. I'd go up to New York City and wave my ass around. So basically, I'd go up and meet with all these guys and go, fuck, I'm doing all these deals with Blackstone, and we're killing it, blah, blah, blah. And of course, they all wanted to do business with me then. So I would bring up two or three deals that I had under contract and literally take eight meetings with, they guys kind of look like you, private equity guys, fucking alphas. And I would say, yo, I have this deal tied up, and I was telling somebody, the key to making money is a story. Everybody wants a story. Hey, but, you know, Brad, here's this apartment deal. You want a fucking story. Why am I buying it? Okay. I always had a story. Hey, I know the guy. I got the brokers fucking laid last night, and he gave me an in on this deal. Or I've bought 10 deals from this developer, and every time I buy one, I've never retraded them, never blah, blah, blah. So he gives them to me before he gives them to the broker. Or I see something they don't see. I own six other properties in the community, and they're paying too much for landscaping. They're paying too much for this, that, whatever. So I made sure I always had an idea, and then it was actually a fucking good deal. I am 100, like, I've never thought about this, but I think I bat 100% or, you know, 1,000 at raising money. I don't think I've ever tried to raise money and been told no by someone because I won't bring bullshit. That's what annoys me. I get 100 bullshit ideas a day, DM to me or something that like before you send that shit to me, ask two of your friends, is this a good idea? They don't even have to fucking be business people, right? Like I get sent the dumbest shit. My lawyer called, said, Pat, no more crypto hot dog stands. You know, so it's like the stupidest shit I see. And like, I'm new guy in Miami. So every fucking guy there thinks I'm like the new dumb money. I get pitched so much shit. But me, the reason I guess I'm successful is I wouldn't ring you up if I didn't, one, know I was going to do the deal myself, even if you weren't going to do it. And two, like, it didn't have a fuck. It wasn't like a such an interesting story that I'm calling you like, If not, just fucking use UBS, pay him a 20 bips, right? On whatever. You don't need to pay a guy like me 2 and 20.
What's a bip?
Basis point. Oh. So if one percentage point is 100 basis points, you know, one bip is, you know. But when you're talking about billions of dollars and you're trying to fix your interest rate, So interest rates swing nonstop. So imagine you have a $1 billion portfolio tied up and you're getting a $700 million loan. Your due diligence period is 60 days. First 30 days is fucking free. After 30 days, you have to put up big boy money on $1 billion. Is probably $15, $20 million non-refundable. During that time, your rate is still floating, right? Because fucking turn on CNBC, somebody farts in the Middle East and the fucking rates go like this. So you're trying to lock that rate. You're trying to lock that rate as quickly as possible. And, you know, so yeah, every little basis point on big numbers fucking really means a lot. That's why all these guys are so fucked. They were paying, me too, 1 and 2% interest rate. Guess what it is now? 7. So say you're earning $100 in rent and you were paying your mortgage was 1%. Now you're paying 7 times. So, but collecting the same rent. That's fucking hard to make those math, you know, that math work.
So is this why you sold some of your company or one of your doors, or how many doors did you sell?
So I sold all. So my business plan, I called it buy it, fix it, sell it. And Blackstone actually stole that from me, I swear. But it basically was like flipping a house, but I was doing it with 300 unit apartment communities. I would buy this community and say it was 10 years old. I'd walk it and say the clubhouse felt a little dated. The deal down the street had wood floors and this had the shitty carpet. So I'd rip that out. I'd make it look like a brand new product, but still be able to rent it for a little bit less because I bought it less. And so that was my play. So over 2 or 3 years, I'd fix the kitchens and the, you know, whatever. As a resident would move out, I would fix them up and charge higher rent. A lot of my competitors would buy those buildings, evict everyone, and then go in and do all the work to the buildings and then release them. I thought that was stupid. I never turned off my income stream. So, because in the apartment business, you have 50% turnover no matter who fuck you are. You could be the best or the worst, you have 50% turnover, pretty much. So as those people move out, why not take a week and then do the work versus emptying the whole building? It just never made sense to me. I like cash flow. I can't breathe. I can't sleep at night if I don't have cash flow.
So at some point you sold out. What was the biggest chunk of money you've ever had in your account now?
I have well over 300 million liquidity. And
right now?
Yeah.
How's that feel?
Fucking amazing. It feels like the American dream. He works for me, but he's also one of my closest friends. I met Ty in a nightclub in New York City. He has seen me up, down, sideways, whatever. I went through a nasty divorce. Dude, if you knew me in high school, I go back to Tampa every other weekend to see my sons. And so at like my kids' fucking flag football games, I went to an all guys high school. I run into my buddies. They're like, Carol, what the fuck? Like, nobody can believe it. My life is like a legal version of Wolf of Wall Street or something. Like, and I can't explain it. It's just every day is something amazing. Fucking amazing just today, meaning you, you know? And
well, that's more than likely because, dude, money opens doors.
It does. But I get a lot of kids that reach out to me. So some of my best mentors, Tom Shannon, literally I have his name saved as Tom Shannon / dad. I've known him since I was 8 years old. He's fucking stud. But he taught me, when he was giving me advice, if I would look somewhere else or if I would fucking talk over him, one, he'd probably smack me, but two, he'd dismiss me. So like, I was always very good at I would look for the richest guy when I would go up to New York, who's the most successful guy? And I would fucking cold call the guy. Back then I would do it either through LinkedIn or email. And I would say, hey, listen, I know you're busy, but I'm up meeting with the group right next to you, and can I buy you a coffee? My name's Patrick Carroll. I'll take 5 minutes. That 5 minutes would usually, if the guy was cool enough, would turn into like 2 hours. Because we would just fucking, guys like us are cut from the same cloth. We fucking meet another guy like us and, you know. And so I meet a lot of young guys. And sometimes you click like that. You're like, fuck yeah, this kid's got the fire in his belly. And then crickets. Me, I would meet with somebody, the next fucking day they'd have a handwritten letter that I would write on good, you know, stationery with my Mont Blanc pen. I was yes or no store. I fucking, what I used to call watering the bushes. I would maintain all my contacts, starting with the best. Hey, I haven't talked to so-and-so who's a billionaire, by the way, who is nice to my kids and is actually a good dude. Let me ring him up and just check in. How's wife? How's kids? How's business? Goddamn, these fucking interest rates are crazy. Blah, blah, blah. We were talking about cigars. I always sent like a box of Cuban cigars or something that I would like to like my top 50 investors or contacts or friends. I always spent heavy on that. And investor, like get my biggest investors, like Prudential and, you know, State of whatever. These guys make like 150 grand a year. And they're, because of their investment with me, they're letting a guy from fucking Tampa, Florida make millions, and they know it. And so like in 2019, I finally, man, I had made enough money. I was finally comfortable in my own skin. I bought like a 42-foot Hydrosport, which is like a fishing boat. I kept it down in the Bahamas. And so I would fly like six of these nerdy guys from like Wisconsin down to the Bahamas. I'd have hot chicks, meet them with fucking Carol Yetis full of booze. And it was the first time they actually got to see me in not a suit and tie. So I had my hat on backwards. I was listening to rap music. And I was really just like, and I would tell them every 5 minutes, felt like, just thank you. Like, you guys are letting me hear. And I'm humble, man. And I fucking mean it. Like, 5 months ago, they were writing negative articles about me, some bullshit in Page Six, you know.
What were they writing?
They wrote that I spit in a waiter's face, which I didn't. This waiter was obnoxious. I was with three other guys. We were sitting at a sushi bar. One was my lawyer. Two other guys I would fucking take a bullet for, right? Stand-up guys. Some chick, it was a typical Miami girl, is sitting with a guy. The guy has his face back, or is back to me. The girl's flirting with me, blah, blah, blah. My friend knows the guy. So I said, you don't mind? And I was like, all right. The girl follows me into the bathroom, gets my phone number, starts texting me while at dinner, blah, blah, blah. The manager guy, maitre d', comes over to me and says, please stop harassing that girl. I said, she followed me to the bathroom. When I go pay my check, he said, you're no longer allowed here. I said, what'd I do? He said, my attitude. I said, watch your attitude. And I went like this. And they sent the video. It went viral. And it said, I spit on him. And like, even right now, I'm about to drink water. Like, I always get cotton mouth for whatever. I didn't even have saliva in my mouth. That's why I know for a fact I don't spit. I'm not a 6-year-old girl, you know, but that hit the press. I mean, look, I went to a fashion show in Milan for Tom Ford 2 weeks ago, and I bought probably $100,000 worth of stuff. Over 2 years, I bought $800,000 worth of Tom Ford. All this shit's Tom Ford. They invite me and my girlfriend to go over there. They sell my girlfriend, or ex-fiance, six evening dresses, like $100,000 worth of dresses, and didn't even tell me about it. She's 25. So I'm like, what the fuck? So she goes and returns two dresses when we get back. One of them called the Page Six, the fucking tabloid, and it said, you know, hot shot Patrick Carroll goes over to fashion show, blah, 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 and basically returns some clothes. How is that newsworthy? Where people are dying, right? They write about that shit. So you watch my social media? I have been shitting on them. All I'm going to do is be friends with brands that are friends with me. You know, Patek, Keaton. All since I've started dogging Tom Ford, they've all sent me gifts. They've all DM'd me. It's hilarious. I'll tell you. So what I'm happiest about is about 2 years ago, and I know you know, it felt like this cancel culture was going to make it not cool to be able to say fuck. To be able to, like, I went to an all-guys high school. My sense of humor is stuck in that period. I say nasty, dirty jokes that are, but in my mind, harmless. I don't mean anything bad by them, right? Like, this world got so sensitive with the cancel culture, I wouldn't have been a public CEO for anything. Right? How do you fire somebody? Anybody can say, well, he fired me for this or that, whatever. I mean, anybody can look in your closet. Anyone can make a false accusation. And even if it's wrong, it's going to hit the paper and you're fucked. So
when you, you're dating yourself when you say it hits the paper
or whatever the fuck it is. Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah.
There ain't no paper anymore, is there?
But anyway, I'm black.
have you seen the clown that hides from gay people?
Grant Cardone?
No. Oh. Have you seen that clown that hides from gay people?
No.
You haven't seen it?
Uh-uh.
You haven't?
No.
Man, that's weird.
Oh, God. What am I missing?
The clown that hides from gay people. You haven't seen it? Might be hiding from you, motherfucker.
I like that. I like that.
See, I just added one to your repertoire. But by the
way, if you said that shit and you're a public CEO...
If you're a public CEO, you say?
Yeah.
Well, you were never public, were you?
Never. But all my investors were institutional.
But look at Elon Musk, dude. He smoked weed. He's public CEO.
Him and I have the same lawyer. But he catches shit for it. Like I was telling somebody the other day. I mean, he finally came out because on this pay package, they said, oh, he's on drugs. Because guess what? Every successful person throughout history, they say he's crazy. Look at Steve Jobs, all, you name it. You know what I'm talking about.
Look at anybody.
Right. So Elon basically came out, and because they said he failed a drug test, which I don't think he did. But he said, who gives a fuck?
That's what I'd say.
I've got SpaceX, which I'm an investor in, which is killing it. I've got this little thing called Tesla. I'm worth $300 billion. How about you back the fuck off? Or how about you call me low-key, and I'll tell you whatever it is. Like, I remember I met a trainer that used to be the wellness guy at Apple. He was fucking tank. He before that, he was like the strength coach at Stanford. He was, for some reason, working out at this gym in Tampa, and I became friends with him. And I said, and it was right when Jeff Bezos came out, and it was all yoked up at like Sun Valley or whatever.
That's what billions do.
Yeah. So I said, what are these motherfuckers out in Silicon Valley doing? And he said, well, they're all on HGH, they're all on testosterone, they're all on Adderall, and they all microdose something. I said, where do I get all that shit? You know, like, if it's going to make me a superhuman and it's not bad, like, I don't drink alcohol. My friends like to say I'm allergic to alcohol. When I drink, I break out in handcuffs. It is true. Like, I quit drinking when I was 21 till 41, all good. I drank for like a year and a half. You asked why those negative articles. There's another one in page 6 that says billionaire brawl. It's apparently I got in a fight, which is not true, with like some 67-year-old. But drinking in me is just not a good look. But, you know, I don't know what I got on the drinking for. But anyway. Oh, so most people are crazy. So Elon fucking said, you know what? Imagine if this was like heroin and crack and all that. I'm still producing, right? So fuck off. But he still has to answer to fucking public company CEOs.
I don't understand why he does. If shareholders don't like it, fucking sell your shares.
Well, if he sold his shares, the shares would tank because he owns such a big, like if he flooded the market.
No, I mean, if you don't like it as a shareholder.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when my investors, so in my deals, when I say I would go out and buy a $100 million property and I could borrow $70 million, I'd have to come up with $30 million cash. My investors would want to see what they would call skin in the game. So out of that $30 million in cash, I would have to put up $3 million as my GP co-invest, okay?
That's not bad, though.
Not bad
at all. They'll give you the 27?
Yeah, and they give you what's called a carry. So after the deal sells, I get my money back. They get their money back. We each get a 7 or 8% return. On top of whatever I put in, I get the additional 20%. That's where all these hedge fund and private equity guys get rich as fuck. So, but those investors, my point is, those investors, even if they're not public, they have, you know, endowment money. They have basically institutional public money. So they're working for Goldman Sachs. They're working for all these ultra woke companies. So like, yeah, I mean, when I went through my nasty divorce in 2019, it was nothing more than a rich guy divorce. Like there was accusations, there was this, that, whatever.
What'd
like,
she end up getting?
$30 million.
That ain't bad.
It was 1 month. I'm not even gonna go there. It was not bad.
You guys married the whole time?
It was a flesh wound. Yeah, but we had structures in place. I did the right thing. I think I could probably have paid her less based off the structuring that I had set up long in advance. But I have 3 sons, and I wanted them to live a certain lifestyle, and I wanted to be able to look them in the eye when they get older and tell them I did right by their mother, which I did.
Yeah.
And And I've made so, and
how much did you, how much did you end up with?
How much? A lot. And what happened also is after I settled, the dust settled, I still owned, you know, 60,000 apartments that then COVID happened. When COVID happened, my whole red state strategy, it was like it poured gasoline on it. So my portfolio quadrupled in value. So that's good karma. So yeah. I paid my lick, still had it. I basically took my licks, held onto my portfolio, and then it quadrupled in value.
Yeah. Well, again, you did the right thing. To me, like if some bimbo married you because you're rich and then divorced and took half your dough, I don't like that. But if someone like you get married, you're both not really anything. She stays at home and, you know, supports you and you go get fucking rich as shit. And then you get divorced, dude, she deserves a chunk.
A chunk. That's not everything.
A chunk though.
Yeah.
Like when people say Bezos' wife got whatever, dude, to me, that's a killer deal.
Killer deal.
Like, dude. And
by the way, he just got announced as the richest guy in the world again yesterday. So think about it. He cut her a check for like $30 billion. He bought a $500 million plane. I've seen the guy personally spend $7 billion in the last 3 years on bullshit. He's still now the rich. His wealth keeps going up, right? That's amazing.
Once you get to that level, man, your money makes money beyond money. Like you can't even spend it all.
Dude, I was even telling my girlfriend, and this was probably way over her head, but like, I get my liquidity statement because I'm fanatical about liquidity. I want to know every single month what my liquidity is. And so, like, and I've kind of been spending heavy, like, the past 6 months, but my fucking liquidity keeps going up. And I'm like, what the fuck? Well, the stock market's up. I probably have, out of my liquid assets, I probably have 30% in stocks. So that lift is kind of, you know, covering my stupid trip to fucking Milan and, you know, whatever.
What about Bitcoin? You got any of that?
I never touched it.
Wow.
And not because I was smart or not smart. I just was so busy at the time with my real estate business. And then when I was selling off a bunch and I first moved to Miami, this is like 2.5 years ago, I was like, fuck it. I am going to spend 2 months learning this stuff. Cause bro, everybody was down there. It was Bitcoin this. A friend of mine started a company called MoonPay. I was like, I'm going to start making investments. I looked at 100 deals, couldn't make sense out of any of them, man.
And well, the only reason I got some was because I was dealing with customers here. They wanted to pay in Bitcoin. And I'm like, Dude, I don't care if you're paying goats as long as I know where to get rid of them. So they gave me $80,000 in Bitcoin when they were $600 each. And they said, those are going to go to 1,000. I'd hold on to them. So I held on to them and they went to 1,000. Then they went to 2,000. Then they went to 3,000. And now I'm like, dude, these things. And what's crazy is one time they were coming out of here. I had a poker table that we filmed a VT on with all the World Series of Poker players.
Oh, that's cool.
So they said, you know, you guys aren't using that anymore. Can I buy it from you? And I said, sure. And I was like, you know, give me 3 Bitcoin. and so he gave me 3 Bitcoin. Well, dude, now if I'd have held them, because I didn't, that he would have paid $200,000 for that table, but I sold them not shortly thereafter for like, you know, I think it was $14,000 each. So still, I mean, three times $14,000 for the poker table.
Man, I've heard stories. I mean, there was a guy, they called him Aussie Matt or some shit. I met him down in the Bahamas, and this kid, like, similar story, like, owned a shitload of Bitcoin. It went up crazy and he was like smart enough to sell and like walked with like $700 million and like just went from Bahamas to like, I think like bounced around the world with his Australian buddies, just like slaying it and having fun. And like, I was pretty jealous of him at the time.
Well, a friend of mine bought Ethereum when it was chump change. And now he's sent me his little account statement the other day just to make me fuck it.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it had 490 million in it.
Jesus fuck.
I said, dude, see, now that's real money right there. Like, totally. Dude, 300 million is real money, but 490, like, dude, you could piss away 190 and still have 300.
But who's bringing the big money to Vegas? Like, who are the guys that are uprooting and coming here? I mean, obviously,
Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, I heard about that. That's pretty awesome. And he's building studios out here,
bringing Hollywood here.
That's fucking badass. Yeah, he's a hustler.
Yeah, you know, you got NBA teams coming.
Yeah.
MLB teams coming. Like, Vegas is on the move.
I was out here for F1. That was fucking big. Yeah, Vegas is definitely on the move.
Which is funny because my wife wants to move to Nashville. So I got a house in Nashville just to like pacify her.
Yeah.
But she wants to like be there. I'm like, babe, what do you look at Vegas?
What do you think is the correlation between Vegas and Miami?
What's the correlation?
Yeah. Taxes. Oh, government. Yeah. What's the correlation between California and New York?
Taxes and government. Yeah.
Isn't it?
Well, they both suck. Yeah.
Vegas kind of like if all things equal, I mean, and you could take the fruits and nuts out of California, like, and it's 70 degrees. I'd live there versus
California would be wonderful if the dipshits weren't there.
So versus us in the desert or Miami in August, but it's just too big of a fucking delta to pay to live there.
Where do you live now?
Miami Beach.
So where before that?
New York. I was in New York for like 2 years, but I spent 15 years in Atlanta, Georgia.
So you made all your money in basically multifamily.
Yeah. About 80%.
And you sold 75,000 doors.
Yep.
But you still own 25,000 or so.
Yep.
So you just like cash flow that or.
Yeah. I mean, so there are a series of funds.
Why did you sell them all?
There's a series of funds. So we, you know, Basically, I'll buy it off when I bought them, right? So usually, every deal I bought, I do a business plan. It's going to take me 2 to 3 years to do this. So the investment period, hold period should be 3 to 5 years. So a lot of those deals I may have bought 2 or 3 years ago, the interest rates went away from us. We're smart. We bought cap rates, and we have plenty of term on our loan, or interest rate caps, and we have plenty of term on our loan, so we can ride it out. So what's happening is the properties are still doing fine, cash flowing. Just you're not seeing these ridiculous, you know, increases in valuations. And so sellers that are not forced to sell are not selling. So, and this has been going on, by the way, for a year and a half. So that's why I sold my management company. It was 1,000 employees. You know, the Page Six stuff, I got written up a couple of times, and it was like the worst nightmare because like these people that thought I was their hero and, you know, like wore my name on their shirts and, you know, respected me, like turned on me. It felt like, I don't know if they did or didn't, but that's what it felt like. And I'm like, fuck this. I carry this whole fucking company through COVID. Through COVID, I was going through my divorce. I hadn't seen my kids in 6 months because of the nasty lawyers. I get a call from my lenders. I had 135 apartment complexes, so something like 40,000 units. And they basically said, look, quarantine just started. Like, we're just going to tell you to send the keys in because no one's going to be paying rent. You know what ended up happening? And so, by the way, that day, I called my employees and I said, I have X amount of liquidity, and I was fully disclosure with them. Go home, hug your families. This is a weird fucking time. Perfect job security. I don't give a fuck if we earn a dollar in revenue. You can call any of my employees and ask them that. What happened was everybody moved to those markets. Not one person stopped paying rent. In fact, rents went up. Those negative articles came out. They turned on me. I sold that motherfucker and I'm back. And I don't keep grudges a long time, just forever. And so I'm going to sit on my hands during my non-compete, and then I'm going to come back and buy the whole motherfucking market.
Dude, I want to buy them with you.
You can't do it, man. I mean, I love it. That's what I was telling him. I'm all like, that's another reason. I've never been the guy to over-negotiate. Why are you going to over-negotiate? If you and I are going to do a deal, why am I going to haggle? So we start off our business relationship pissed off. Or say I cut too good of a deal. Like one of my best friends, first billionaire I ever knew, put $1 million into my company. And it was,
which to him is nothing.
And at the time to me, it was nothing too, because my business was kicking ass. What it did give me, and this is what he told me. He said, Pat, one day you're a young guy and you're doing really well, but one day you may need to have a fucking billionaire behind you just to show the market you've got staying power. And that was right. He probably made 50x on his investment. And so to me, I was, even though I loved him and everything and respected him, I was still a little bit bitter. So I always tell people,
because he got you too good, you too hard.
So I always tell people that work for me and work with me, if we cut too sweet of a deal, I don't want resentment. I want you fucking waking up in a 3-point stance, fucking at the office at 5 a.m. because you're so excited because you're making so much fucking money. I don't want you there going, this fucking prick is, you know, on his boat and he's not giving me, you know, it's got to be a win-win in alignment of interests.
Well, I agree with that. Matter of fact, drop a bomb on that one. I always tell people, dude, you got to do win-win or it doesn't last.
It doesn't last.
So you brought up Grant Cardone. Are you and him buddies? Are you and him competitors?
We're now competitors. I mean, I don't raise money and I'm technically like a non-compete. I don't raise money for apartments, you know, via social media. I didn't even know it was allowed. I didn't know that was a thing. I've raised, you know, billions of dollars, but through institutions. I found out he raised $1 billion. He is not well respected at all in the multifamily business. When I was, full disclosure, he's going to get pissed, but this is true.
He probably doesn't listen to this show.
Whatever.
I'm joking.
Well, people.
I'm joking, dude. Okay. Guaranteed listens to the show.
Because people that listen to me or you, somebody does, because I always get the feedback.
He'll get tagged.
Okay. So he calls
Not only that, he listens, dude. He watches me.
All right. So Grant, listen up. Grant calls me, what up, dog? You're selling your business? I want to buy it. I said, well, I've hired UBS as my investment bank. There's a process. I can give you their number. UBS, go so. So he's blowing me up. Pat, what the fuck? You know, they didn't even let me in. And I had just done his podcast. So I'm trying to be cool with the guy. My banker said, we have 87 signed qualified NDAs. No cash or no financing contingencies. We're not taking a flyer on some slap dick named Grant Cardone. No offense. We've never heard of him. My employees came to me and said, if you let him in the bidding process, we will quit. And that's facts. He's not respected one iota in the multifamily investment business, but he's raised $1 billion from non-sophisticated investors. He's overpaid for everything. And on my word, I'll fucking pay for the appraisal. Go appraise the property. And I guarantee you the property you bought a year and a half ago is worth 30% less. How do I know? Because I'm fucking good at what I do, you know? And so no one's really called him out on that. He wants to threaten defamation to people. This ain't fucking defamation. This is facts, big boy. And you ask if I'm a competitor, if I can fucking make money at what he's doing, yeah. Like, I'll fucking tap dance if it's enough money.
So his defamation suit against John Legere, that's because John said, you're no billionaire. You're a clown, yada, yada, yada. Do you think Grant's a billionaire?
I think Grant makes probably $50 to $100 million a year doing various things, whatever he's doing. I know he marks up his properties and makes money that way, and he probably does make money from asset management fees like I was doing. I bet he's making a shitload of money per year. But I saw a video where he tried to break down his net worth and he was putting like stupid valuations on his 10X company and this, that, whatever. No one's paying dick for Grant Cardone's businesses because his business without Grant Cardone doesn't mean shit. And so there is no multiple. So his net worth is not $1 billion unless he has $1 billion cash. Because again, like Elon Musk can look at Tesla's stock price and say, this is what I'm worth. What's the market value for Grant Cardone's fucking sales machine without him? You know, so no, he's not a billionaire.
Well, without him might be the question, but you know, I think because I mean, you know, it's a substantial amount of recurring revenue.
He's making a shit ton of money.
And when you say without him, he's really not there and hasn't been for about 5 years. He's fully into real estate.
So the way I sold my business was I had property management fees, I had asset management fees, I had recurring fees. So they were able to put, thank God, a pretty healthy multiple on that, because you could go out and say, okay, we're going to own this property 10 years, that property, and you could project out how long the fees are there. How does he project that out? Like, if I was going to buy Grant Cardone Enterprises, how would I project out that?
The what?
Like the reoccurring revenue side.
Well, because he has contracts with businesses.
Oh, really? See, I don't know how the business works. So maybe it is a billion. Look, The guy is rich as fuck. He can fly a G6, no problem, apparently.
G650.
Yeah. I don't know.
Extended.
So, like, yes. Again, so it's like, and people ask me all that all the time, billionaire, whatever. Like,
well, you could with $300 million net worth. Yeah, you could drive, you could fly a 650. Well,
my net worth is probably bigger than that. But, like, you know, who cares? Like, it's, if it's not a billion, it's close enough to fucking. Who gives a fuck?
Right? Yeah, I always tell people, look, even $300 million. You can do at $300 million anything. You can do at $900 million, yeah. Pretty much.
And look, instead of owning the yacht, charter the motherfucker. Instead of owning the plane, charter the motherfucker, right?
I
was told if it flies, floats, or fucks, rent it.
Yeah. Well, the guy that's right upstairs from us, he's a billionaire. He's the third largest taxpayer in Nevada.
Oof.
And he told me three times, you know, because I kept saying, man, I got to get a jet, dude. He said, just charter him.
Dude,
he goes, trust me, you don't want one.
Well, if for some reason you forget that, call me. Cause I've owned them. I've owned fractions. I'm literally thinking about buying another one right now. Cause I'm that stupid. Cause it feels, you want to be able to say, yeah, my plane. Fuck it. I chartered a G5 to fly from Miami to LA or to San Diego. And then we flew it here. I fly it. It's a beautiful plane. I have no emotional attachment. Did I just fucking kill this thing? But anyway, like, I'm going to charter. Like, and I usually fly commercial, like Air France to Europe. I finally decided that I'm going to fly private going forward, because even if you do it first class, the people in the airport just want, like, I try to keep myself away from people that'll fucking put me in a bad mood.
Do you get recognized right now?
Not really.
So
I mean, it just, every once in a while, it was weird. Like, I was in Tampa with my sons, and I was like, one of them wanted like Dunkin' Donuts and one of them wanted Wawa, this fucking gas station. So I had to go get them like fucking donuts and then Cokes. And we're running across the street and it's raining. Some young, like 22-year-old kid comes running up, Mr. Carroll. And I'm like, he's like, I love what you're doing, man. Thanks. My kids were like, wow. That, like, little things like that, but not for the most part.
So, I mean, selling off all those units gave you some nice cash. Are you now going to go back and buy more units as soon as your no competes up?
I mean, I'm going to buy what makes sense to buy when it makes sense to buy. Like right now, you know.
How do you know, though?
Well, because I don't let numbers lie. So if I can buy a $100 income stream and borrow, and it costs me 70 cents to borrow, and I get to keep that $30. That's a good deal. I don't really care what anyone else tells me. Right now, the math doesn't work because it costs you 7% to borrow, and properties are selling at 4%.
So that means, to the same analogy, that means that you're paying what, a dollar four?
Yeah, you're basically paying. Let's see here. You're basically, yeah, dude. Well, think about it. If you bought a $100 house like 3 years ago and your rate was $2 or 2%, you'd be paying $2. Now, if you went and bought that house, you're paying like $8 or $9.
No matter who you are, what kind of credit you have.
I was looking at buying a house as a spec home to renovate. It was a $20 million house. We're going to fix it up. I was going to put a loan on it. Even UBS, where I keep all my stuff, it's still going to be like the sevens. It's fucking, you know, money's just expensive. If you want to go break ground on a new development, it's intense.
Well, why would you borrow? Why wouldn't you just use yours at 0% or pay yourself three?
Well, my cash is earning 5% right now. So when people say there's no cost of your own capital, that's bullshit. Yeah, I'm getting 5%. So when I do the math, I say I can take Northern Trust. They were going to give me the loan. I can take their money for an extra 2 points and keep my money under my pillow and feel good at night. You know, that's the way I look at it. Now, if the loan was 20%, I'd use my cash. You know, like, I'm not going to do that. But for an extra 2 points, you know, I've never defaulted on a loan either. You can check that out. But I do like the ability to, if shit goes wrong, I have my war chest of cash when I have to go negotiate with a banker for an extension, or, you know what I'm saying? I'd rather not have my, you know, balls and advice when I have to ask for favors. You know, you want to come from a position of power and say, listen, you know, I got, I'm going to be fine with this. And you know what? Nobody's going to be able to run it as well. And I don't want to put a bad taste in your mouth. Like, this is not my doing, by the way. Like, the market. Now, if I fucked up, I'd own it. But if the market goes sideways, all you can do as a gentleman and professional is fucking be honest with your investors and solve the problem as best you can, right?
Which sometimes is time.
Yeah. But communicate that, right? Like, the biggest thing is, I think people hate surprises, right? Imagine if I called you and say, oh, Brad, that deal we did, instead of 2 years, it's going to take 4 years, man. But it's still a good company. The market to exit it just sucks right now. Oh, okay. That sucks, but whatever. You know, it's a lot better than me calling you and saying, you know, hey, well, you know, it's just communication. I always overly communicate. And that's why I hate, like, I've made a lot of, you know, side investments, you know, which I regret kind of, because it was like $1 million here, $1 million there. You look up and I have like $30 million in random stupid shit.
And with buddies and shit?
Yeah. And so don't do that. Like, don't let me ever do that. Yeah.
Oh, dude, I got one right now. Well, not to that fucking level, like, but dude, I'm getting whacked right now.
And so it's the worst, bro. And like I said, I am so good at over communicating with my investors and my reporting packages. That's why I think I'm going to be good in raising money or competing with any of these guys too. I'm a Virgo. I am fucking anal. Like, I want it perfect. I want it done the way I want it. And so when I invest with one of my buddies or whatever, and they're fucking, hey, motherfucker, how's the deal going? I haven't heard anything in a year. Like,
no meetings, no minutes, yeah, no financials.
You wonder why they had to come to you, their buddy, to raise the money, right? Like, it's, anyway.
So how would someone get started? Like, I always listen. I mean, and I don't know if you know my and Grant's history.
No, I don't.
Well, when I met Grant, he was a trainer for car salesman.
No shit.
Yeah, and I had this place, and I was going to go beat his ass at being a trainer because my training was better, and I was better. And I'm like, freaking boom. But he beat me to the punch. He had already had a bigger name in the auto space. So everyone that I was running into said, you know, I love your software, which is what this place is.
Yep.
But we use this guy or this guy. And one of them that they kept saying was Grant Cardone. So I'm like, well, so you're saying if I had Grant Cardone on my software, you'd buy it. And they're like, yeah. So I went and closed Grant on using my software.
Smart.
Well, I made him a deal. I'll pay for everything. And then you give me 20% of all the revenue you make off my software. And I'll even show you where some customers are and I'll show you how to do it. Yada, yada, yada. He said, okay, made a deal. Well, as soon as he started, you know, crushing it, he wanted to change the deal. And I'm like, wait a minute, dude, that ain't a deal. But he was always in real estate on the side. He was taking all his money, even back then, putting it into real estate.
Really?
And he kept telling me, dude, real estate. But I didn't really fully understand it, so I didn't follow him into it.
You know how you make money in real estate? Other people's money. And I'll tell you why. He's raised now $1 billion. On that $1 billion, I don't know if it's a 1% or 2% asset management fee. Say it's a
1.5%.
Okay, so that's $15 million a year, every year. Okay.
Plus he owns 35% of the equity of whatever he purchases.
With no pref, right? So when I go do my deals, my investors get their money back plus 8%. Grant gets a straight 20%, no pref. That's crazy.
That's because he's also dealing with people that have no idea that is a whack job.
I am aware. And I am also talking about it. Like, watch my shit. I talk about it all the time. I literally did a video on Grant 2 days ago, like, because of the defamation stuff. Like, anyway.
Are you trying to get in a battle?
I think it would be good content. I think he probably knows. I mean, I have nothing against the guy personally. I think he's cool. He's making money and, like, whatever. But it's good content. Look what Jake Paul is doing. Like, I would fucking fight Mike Tyson if they paid me that money. You know what I'm saying? Like, so yeah, I would love Grant to come on this or something like that and actually compare his track record to mine, because I know it's better. I know mine's better, right? And so
tit for tat, like, do you have more units, more money, or
any way you want to analyze it?
So you've far outperformed Grant Cardone
on institutional and multifamily investing, the type that he's targeting, 100%. It's been audited.
Now, is he in any danger? You hear all the haters talking about, oh, dude, he's going down for this and that. Or now that the interest rates are up, he's screwed because he didn't have fixed rates and everybody wants to hate. Meanwhile, again, because I got to admire him, he's flying around on G650s. He's got two helicopters. He's got beach houses on both coasts.
How accurate of an answer do you want?
Well, accurate.
Okay. So right now, Grant, even if he was smart enough to keep, I know his loans, because I know the loans, they're public record. I've looked at them. So I know the loan to value. So say he bought a property that was worth $100 and he put a 60% loan on it. Now that property's worth 70 and he's still got a $60 million loan on it. So that's pretty tight, right? It's not death zone yet, but it's, you know, your asshole's puckered up a little bit. You have interest rates caps because the lender forces you to, but they don't force you to do it for the whole time, just 2 years. So most guys, especially when interest rates didn't fucking do anything for 10 years, would only buy it for 2 years, which is probably what he did. I don't know. I'm speculating on that. It's happening on my portfolio. Our cash flows are down because even though we have rate caps, they're at the max of the rate. So we're based off floating rate, we're paying more out in interest. So his cash flows are 100% down. You can look at Blackstone, the biggest real estate owner in the world. They own a lot of what Grant and I own, the same type of properties. Their cash flows are way fucking down. So yes, his properties are worth less and his cash flows 100% are down. Is he going to lose his properties? I doubt it. Is he going to be fucked financially? Absolutely not. Not unless he gets caught doing something illegal or something, because he's made a lot of money. And that house he bought in Miami, I think he bought it for like 20. It's probably worth 40, you know? That's a pretty accurate answer, I think. But like, you know.
So real estate's just the way to go. Well, so how can a guy, like if I'm listening, and I am, what would you do if you were me to just get started? Just get started. Because again, I can't wrap my heads around going to a bank and saying, hey, loan me $70 million on this big ass.
Well, the best way to get, so do you want to be king or do you want to be rich? Meaning, do you want to have a few properties, you own 100% of them, and you walk up and they say, hey, Brad, blah, blah, blah. Or do you want to be a general partner and, you know, 10, 20,000 units around Vegas, and you've got, you know, guys like myself and Dana White and other buddy, you know, as partners do, but you know what I'm saying?
Like, king.
Yeah, me too. Well, yeah. Well, king, so you want to own less deals, but own them all by yourself. So
no, I just want to be a king.
Oh, well, you already are. But like, so the best way, like I tell kids, 20-year-olds or whatever, when they want to get started, buy a single family home and fix it up, rent it out, or flip it, period. That's how I started. That's how most people start.
But if I would have done it and now it's worth 70% when I bought it at 100, wouldn't I be screwed?
I'm not guaranteeing success. Like real estate is not risk-free.
Where's the dangers? Because there's the people listening going, dude, look, I want to be like this guy.
The only thing that ever ruins a real estate deal is leverage. So if you own a building, assuming you can pay the taxes and insurance on it, you have no risk really, right? Because you have no gun to your head. You're not having to pay interest. So if it goes empty, you can fucking hold on to it. Where people get in trouble is with when they take loans, right? Because say you go and buy an office building and it's 100% leased. Well, then 40% of the people move out where you're in trouble, right? So
because the value was based on 100% occupancy.
Yeah, well, because you got this loan now against your property.
But it was valued based on occupancy.
And good, so Warren Buffett says no one knows who's swimming naked until the tide goes out. So like a loan in good times don't mean anything, right? It's like, cool, yeah, I'm paying it. It's when the music stops and somebody goes, oh, fuck, I lost all this revenue and I still got to pay this loan. If they had owned it, if their grandfather built it 200 years ago and they had no loan on it, they'd be able to survive. So real estate is very much about staying power. And that was like my answer on Grant. Is it a death blow? No, he'll be able to carry it. The scary thing about him though, is he's raised all his money from retail investors. My investors are institutions with trillions of dollars. So if I have to make a capital call as a general partner, by the way, I've got 10% of the money up, they got 90. So they're motivated to make that capital call. hey, sorry, we have to buy another interest rate cap. You watch CNBC every day. You know rates are through the roof, so the cap's more expensive. Sorry. Fucking money will be in my account by the end of the day.
Yeah, because they're banking, they're hedging their bets.
Good luck trying to track down all these widows and orphans and retail.
That ain't happening. Yeah, but that wouldn't happen.
That's what I'm saying. And so that's
they don't even know what a capital call is.
The guys that are going broke right now, like you read The Real Deal or whatever, there's like these syndicators, kind of like Grant, kind of like that raise money from unsophisticated like doctors and shit like that. They've already lost their portfolios because they don't know what the fuck they're doing, right? So what happens in downturns, obviously, so it's always like the dumbass newbies to the market because they watch for the fucking 10 years where guys like me are making money. Then they're finally like brave enough to jump in. Well, they're fucking probably late. And so the new guys always come in late at the market and always are the first to get wiped out. The guys with staying power, and thank God I have it, even though it's not fun, I'm a deal junkie. And I haven't touched a fucking deal in 2 years. Like, I'm going to wait. Like, that's one thing I can do, like, is I'm disciplined. Like, I'm not going to sign off on a deal unless the numbers make sense.
Well, I put a little money in with Grant only because he just called me and fucking pestered me and pestered me.
I would never do that either.
And I want, I'm like, dude, whatever. Yeah. Like, Christ almighty, here. You know, and I get a check every month, but it ain't a big one. So what I want to do is maybe when you're ready and you're back up, I'm going to put a little money with you.
I love it.
And just see what happens.
I'll
be the judge of who's better, you or Grant.
I would gladly take that, man.
And dude, listen, folks, go watch this dude. Follow him. It's at M, like in Michael, Patrick Carroll, C-A-R-R-O-L-L. You can Google him. He comes up everywhere. You can also go to Lorac, which is Carroll backwards, LoracHoldings.com. I'm sure you're eventually going to have a book.
I hope so.
Now that you're like getting, you know, tons of followers on social media. Yeah. And dude, you're like a playboy now.
Yeah.
You're going to instantly freaking get a lot of followers and fans because you fly around private. You got the money. You got the houses. You got the power. You got the credibility.
Thank you, man.
You're funny.
I tell my buddies in high school, I'm exactly who I wanted to be when I was in high school.
Like, you'll get all the followers that don't like Grant.
Yeah.
Because again, you and him would be like the.
I told one of my mentors one time told me, you want the men to want to be like you and the women to want to fuck you.
Out of curiosity, why'd you get divorced anyway?
Outgrew her. Hooters girl from Decula, Georgia. I was, you know, slaying dragons in New York City, feeling like a king of the universe. I'd come back home and it felt like I jumped in a fucking cold pool. Like, she wouldn't even, I would be so excited. Baby, I just bought a Tom Porter, Patek. She didn't want to learn about it. She didn't give a fuck, you know, and that's what happens. I think that's why I did a post literally on the way to your podcast. Entrepreneurs, you look at them like Elon Musk, been married 5-6 times, all these guys. It's because the girls are attracted to guys like us, the fucking guys with the money and blah, blah, blah. But they don't realize we work 24/7. We're fucking intense.
Yeah. I did a post one time. It went viral. I said, if you want a rich man, then you're going to have a busy man. You know, if you want the dude that comes home at 5 o'clock every day with his fucking lunch pail, well, then, you know, don't expect to live high on the hog.
My ex-wife, while we were on my fucking private jet, said, I just wish you were a simple man. Like my dad. Her dad worked at Quick Trip. I said, well, one, you wouldn't have gone for me. Two, I wouldn't respect myself. Third, we'd be fucking humping it on Southwest Airlines. So it's like Ari Gold.
I'm flying like, Southwest to Nashville.
Like, it's like Ari Gold. It's like, if you want to live in fucking Laguna Hills, you know, I'm going to have to answer my fucking phone at noon on a Wednesday, yep. You know?
People got to realize, dude, they're sacrificed for everything. Well, dude, I appreciate you coming in.
I appreciate you.
I'm gonna follow you on social media. Definitely. And start watching you a little bit. Yeah, man. And fucking, hopefully you can teach me a few things. I wasn't listening to Grant and he freaking sure showed me. I should have been because he killed it.
No, well, trust me, I think he's done 5,000 units. Like I said, I've done 100,000. So anytime you got a question, just let me know.
Indeed. And folks, as always, until next time, keep it real.